And now, a bit of romance.
Two girls on a quest to find which rom-com is the best. P.S. I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
Hello, and welcome to P.S. I Love Rom-Coms, the podcast about guys who on paper are good, people kissing in the rain, that's hashtag mood, and glass blowers who like to brood. We're your hosts. I'm Mia.
And I'm Ellie. P.S. I Love Rom-Coms is a rom-com review podcast where each week, Mia and I try to answer the question, which rom-com is the best rom-com of all time? A tricky question to answer, harder than capturing lightning in a bottle.
Now, we like to start off each episode with a little segment called Which Rom-Com Hero or Heroine Are You Channeling? Where we equate the experiences we've had this week with a famous rom-com hero or heroine. And I can start us off. This week, I am channeling Camille Nanjiani in the classic cleanup sequence that a lot of male characters go through in a rom-com where it's like the cleaning up your life sequence. I sort of moved into a new place in October, and the walls I moved into were sort of like painted kind of a light brown. And then there was like spackle and holes of different colors all around. And I was sort of meaning to get around to fixing it. And it is now officially March, but this last weekend I did finally, it's the first place I lived in Los Angeles where I can paint. So I finally picked two paint colors, ordered them, they arrived, and I spent 2 full days painting my room, which was lovely and challenging and a full body workout. And but it's now complete, and I like hung my stuff back up on the walls and it looks amazing, and I feel amazing, and I feel like a big grown-up all of a sudden. So channeling like, yeah, the all the men of the cleanup sequences, but for some reason more like Kumail, because his room is like kind of sad, and then he sort of cleans it up. So that's who I'm channeling this week.
Okay, I have two questions, a question and a comment. The first question is, what color did you paint your walls?
Okay, so this is kind of unhinged because when I moved into this room, I was like, okay, I have a whole color scheme, color story I'm working with. And I was like, I'm going to paint my room like different shades of green. And that's what I'm going to do.
I love that.
Yeah. And then my mother is actually a color consultant who makes her own paint. Right. So I wasn't really thinking about it. I was like, I'm going to do green. And then my mom did my friend's house, and my friend like kept sending me photos and was like so happy with the results. And I was like, okay, I'm going to talk to my mom. And then my mom and I ended up choosing two different shades of purple, which is my favorite color, which I'm always like avoiding because it's like what I've done my entire life. But it's this like very pretty, like sort of like dusk, darker purple. And then like a lighter, like very peaceful light purple. And I am like, is my room like too pinkish right now? But I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to get rid of anything that's pink in the room. And then when I do that, I think it like really makes everything look very chic. So
it sounds I'm really incredibly chic.
I know you have to come see it, Ellie. It's purple. I'll send you some pictures tonight. It does look incredible. It looks so good. It's just like the pink doesn't fit anymore, but I don't want the pink anyways, but it's like I have these like little pink boxes that to hold stuff in, and I started painting them the dark purple that I have left over, and then they looked so amazing. So yeah, so I'm just changing a few accents, and then it's going to be like literally the perfect bedroom. So can't wait for you to see it.
Oh my gosh.
You got it. And I have it all set up to work. It's like a little, it's like very small, but I have it all set up to work to even like socialize in here. So we could even socialize in here.
Oh my God, I would love that.
So yeah, you'll come over, maybe we'll watch some Yellow Jackets. I have a glass of wine on my TV tray. And I can't wait for you to see it.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait. I've painted a living room before and two bedrooms, and it is a full body workout. And there's this kind of terror that happens as well, where you're like halfway through painting it and you go, uh-oh, have I made a big mistake?
Yes.
And you don't know. And you also don't realize how spilly paint is and how you get paint on everything. It literally gets on everything.
I am so upset because I know this. I grew up with in like a painting family where we would constantly be painting stuff, but I remembered it way more idyllic because I ruined an outfit. I had paint all over my floors. I had paint all over the moldings. Like I wrapped the painter's tape so tight and still like, thank God it actually, most paint like can kind of come off with warm water on hard surfaces. Yeah. But it's also like my body's still so sore. So it's like I only did the most egregious molding and the rest, it's like I still have like paint flecks on my vinyl floor that I gotta address at some point. But I'm like, not today. I am sore. But yeah, oh my God. And then the colors wet look way different than dry. So same when I first painted like the dark purple wet, it was like so light and I was like, fuck, this looks bad. And then it dried and I was like, oh, this is amazing.
Yeah.
It is really, it's like, it's physically and emotionally exhausting.
Yeah.
But worth it. I'm a big grown up now.
You are a big grown up. And it like not only transforms, it takes so long. It takes way longer than you ever think it would. Yeah. Where I'm like impressed it took you 2 days. Like that's pretty fast. But you come from painter stock, so.
Of course. No, thank you for saying that. Because the first day took me 8 hours and everyone was like, wow, really? And I was like, do you know how long it takes to tape your moldings? I'm like, yeah. Do you have any moldings I have in my room? It was a journey, but I'm glad I did it. But that's who I'm channeling. Allie, who are you channeling?
Oh, man. This was a little bit different, but I'm channeling, I would say, Vince Vaughn's character in The Wedding Crashers.
Oh my God, fantastic. And
what's his character's name?
He calls him Baba Ganoush, but that's not his name. Let's see. I got you.
Jeremy. I'm channeling Jeremy. I rewatched Wedding Crashers, I think, a couple of months ago to be like, is this as bad as I... Like, does this hold up? And I will say Bradley Cooper is so delightfully unhinged in that movie.
Oh, my God. Right. And like his breakout role.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And you can see why. He's just like, you can't keep your eyes off of him. And you're like so scared of him, too. But yeah, I think I'm channeling Jeremy because in Wedding Crashers, Jeremy gets injured pretty early on and is just kind of like, just kind of always like kind of like complaining and just like at the mercy of everybody else. And like his friend Owen Wilson, who's like, come on, man, what if we stayed here and partied? And Vince Vaughn is like, no, let's leave. We've crashed for too long. And I've just been at home just like working on my computer a lot for the past couple of months. And like this thing has happened to me, Mia, which is truly horrifying, which I'm starting to get back spasms now. I know it's so sad. And my posture is so bad. I like saw myself in the mirror and I was like, oh, Jesus. And so I bought a back brace for myself to improve my posture while I'm working from home. And the first back brace I bought for myself was too big. And now I've bought a smaller children's back brace and it is great. And I love it.
Wait, what does this look like and how does it help your posture? Because I've Googled this a few times, Allie, because I'm similarly, I have bad posture. I also have very bad posture. What does it look like?
It's basically like I read a bunch of reviews on Amazon and I got like one that was rated pretty highly. It's basically, it kind of looks like, you've seen like Wild West movies, like, or kind of like spy movies where people have like holsters for their guns, where it's kind of like a strap. It's like two straps. I don't know. It's kind of like a backwards bra, I guess, where it's like forcing, you kind of have to like strap your shoulders like back. I'm doing such a horrible job explaining it. You know what it's like? It's like I'm a grocery bag and I'm putting two handles around my shoulders and there's like a invisible person that's gripping the two handles. that meet at my spine and they're pulling it back. So that's kind of what it's like.
Oh my gosh. And it works. So, do you feel like you've straightened up?
Well, yeah. When you wear it, you can't not be straight. So I just have been wearing it a lot because I'm at home and who's to see me wearing this back brace? So and
I want to try it on.
You can come over and try it on. But yeah, I'm I'm pretty happy with it. And I've just been buying, I guess, a lot of weird things on Amazon. But that's one of the things, because when you're at home, it's like, what am I going to do besides online shop? And so,
it's what's going to get you through.
It's what's going to get me through. And so I got this new back brace that I'm pretty psyched about.
Oh, my God, Allie, I love that for you. I adore that it was, you were like, well, and it didn't fit. And then I got a child's one and you're like so stoked on it. Like, yes, absolutely. A well-fitting item is, there's nothing more satisfying. And I'm really excited to hear how your posture progresses. I have had bad posture since the fifth grade and I would love to solve that. So if you like it, I myself might invest in a child's back brace as well. And we can go out in the town in the back braces together because, you know, what are they going to say to us? What do they have? We both have them. Yeah.
maybe they'll think it's a fashion thing. Or that we're like carrying guns because it does look like a gun holster a little bit.
Right. Yeah, so. Although I do think, I don't know. And I mean, I don't want to make anyone feel uncomfortable, but
yeah,
if it's clear, it's a back brace. Absolutely.
Yeah. Speaking of, things that, maybe look kind of rough on the surface, but ended up being really supportive. Let's get into our movie discussion, shall we?
We did it. That was great.
Thank you. This week, we watched the 2002 rom-com Sweet Home Alabama. In this film, New York fashion designer Melanie, played by Reese Witherspoon, suddenly finds herself engaged to the city's most eligible bachelor, Andrew, played by Patrick Dempsey. But Melanie's past holds many secrets, including Jake, played by Josh Lucas, the husband she married in high school and left behind, who refuses to divorce her. Bound and determined to end their relationship once and for all, Melanie sneaks back home to Alabama to confront her past, only to discover that the past isn't done with her yet, or her heart.
Sweet Home Alabama was directed by Andy Tennant, who also directed Fool's Gold and Ever After, and was written by Douglas J. Ebuck and C.J. Cox. And fun fact, Jake's plane lands on Lake Peachtree in Peachtree City, Georgia. It is illegal to land a plane on Lake Peachtree, and the Peachtree City Police issued the production company a $300 ticket. Wow, that sounds real.
It does. That's really funny. Old saying where it's like, better ask for forgiveness than permission.
Right, and $300 is really not that bad for a production, I think.
Yeah, not bad at all.
Allie, had you seen this movie before? What was your relationship with Sweet Home Alabama? And what did you think this time?
Oh, Mia, I have seen this movie. Well, I grew up watching this movie when I was like a kid. Oh my gosh.
Of course.
Watched it so much. Really just like obsessed with it. It did set me up to believe that I was going to be proposed to in a Tiffany's store. Not going to lie.
Oh my God. Yeah. What an expectation.
Really thought that was going to be like kind of a normal thing that just happens to people. Grew up loving this movie, loving Reese Witherspoon. But it was also a movie that I haven't watched for, oh my God, probably 20 years. It's probably been 20 years since I've seen this movie.
Oh my God, that makes
sense. For some reason, I just never rewatched it. And this was the first time I've rewatched it since, and a lot of things went over my head as an 8-year-old. this time I definitely noticed. Like, I never realized that that Reese's character, Melanie, had a miscarriage. Never realized that until watching it this time.
We didn't know that when we were kids. Yeah.
It's like the kind of, they talk about it in a very like tasteful way, but never in a direct way. And so it's like, I mean, they actually handled it really well in the movie. And I think like the character Jake said, like all the kind of like right things. And it was, you know, it's kind of like a complex issue. And I thought that they handled it well, but I was like, oh, whoa, did not miss that when I was 8. And then I also didn't realize that Jake's friend was gay in the movie. That also kind of went over my head.
Right. They also don't ever quite say it except for like the gay bar part.
Yeah. So that went over my head. And then also what went over my head was all of the Confederate flags and the fact that I'm pretty sure Melanie's dad is, I think, racist. So, like there's just like weird moments in it. So I was like, okay.
It reads a little differently. Like on this side of, it just does. No. It's much more sort of alarming. And I think also now, like sort of what's known, you know, I think knowing like how short of time the Confederacy existed and sort of like the forces that that wanted to like keep it alive in living memory. It's like stuff that might have seemed like, oh, this is what the South does, like now seems a lot more like alarming and upsetting now that we're adults.
They were really throwing those Confederate flags around really casually, where it was like, oh, this was made in 2002.
I felt that way as well, because I had seen it a lot growing up, loved it, and then watching it now, even just them being like, starting off being like, oh, is your dad gonna hate me because I'm a Yankee? And I'm just like, who even speaks that way? I mean, maybe I don't know. I'm from the North. I've lived in the Northwest my entire life and on the West Coast, so I don't know. I don't know if that's a thing. It just doesn't feel like a thing. So no, I agree. Those references I felt like were like much more strange. I do feel like the central story to still be like very pleasant and lovely, but it is interesting where the specifics are less charming.
I think 2002. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They were going for charming, and those specifics are much less charming now. But I do agree that like a lot of the movie has held up pretty well. Like I do think that like how they handled, the kind of like, I thought it was really fun that there was like kind of like a hint of like a queer romance in 2002 that wasn't super stereotypical, was like really like lovely and refreshing. And I think like a lot of aspects of the movie were like, pretty awesome. And like I thought that Patrick Dempsey's character, even though he was definitely a good on paper kind of guy, Andrew, was like really lovely and supportive, and like not, he could have been like very like toxic and douchey, and just was like really lovely throughout and supportive of like Melanie and her career.
I felt the same way. No, I felt the same way. And then I read something that also made it add up to me, because I've always found when we sort of have a bit of like the easy breakup at the wedding to jump all the way to the end, when she doesn't end up with good on paper guy, spoiler, if you've heard of good on paper guy, it's not sort of who wins the gal. When she breaks up with him, and he's sort of like, oh, this is what this feels like. It's like I always was like, this is so interesting, because I feel like there's something happening with him that like we're not seeing all of, but they are like hinting at like a deeper growth within him. And then I read, did you read this, Allie, that it was cut, but there was a character that was Reese Witherspoon's assistant who he ends up marrying in the original cut.
Yes.
That whole thing was cut out. And I was like, I felt that, like, you know, I was like, there's more going on with this character than like we're seeing play out.
Yeah.
And it's nice that it still came through as like, oh, this is like a nice dimensional man who I still felt after viewing it. I was like, oh, yeah. And he learned something through this. I can tell that it's not quite the like, he's a dick, don't end up with him. It's like, yeah, he also was maybe not in it for the correct reasons and needed to learn something. And I liked that a lot.
Yeah, it was like, from that, because that line hit me too. And I was like, oh, he's probably the kind of guy who's always gotten everything he's wanted in life.
Yeah.
And like, maybe like, you know, wasn't in it for the right reasons. And like, tried to go after this like unobtainable girl. And then like, oh, maybe it isn't exactly what I want. And it's kind of lovely when he realizes too, because at first he's like, I can't believe you lied to me, which is true. She was a very bad liar and lied to him about
she
her
lied
last
a lot.
Name,
yeah.
her past, her home, her family. But he was just like very compassionate and was like, oh, you were embarrassed that you grew up from like a poor family and stuff like that. And speaking of her lies, I will say, I think that this movie I mean, like the twist and like the plot, like the big like conflict that's keeping them apart, Patrick Dempsey and Reese Witherspoon's character, is so good when you find out that she's still married.
It's so good. It's the best.
It's the freaking best.
Because it's so good. Because this could just be your classic, you know, tier C Hallmark rom-com, right? Where it's like, oh, yeah, a Southern gal in the big city has a big, big politician proposal and she's got to go back to the small town. But the reveal that she's not Melanie Carmichael and that she has this aggressive personality that's revealed, yeah, and this ex-husband who she has a much different dynamic with is so fucking fun. Like,
so fun.
It's what an amazing twist. I love that, Allie. I agree that it's such a blast.
And they do such a good job too. Cause like, God, this movie got me again where like he, you know, she goes back to Alabama to get her handsome husband Jake to sign these divorce papers, and he's like, I'm not gonna sign those, Melanie. And and you know, at first I was like, God, this guy is such a dick. Why doesn't he just fucking sign the papers? Why is he just like, he just wants to make her life hard. How dare he? And then the story unfolds and you realize the reason why he doesn't want to sign the papers is because he's still in love with her. And then you learn that he tried to go to New York to win her back, but he saw like how happy she was there and how well she fit in, and he realized that he had to become a better man before he tried to win her back. And it's like, oh my God, how healthy and lovely and supportive. And so he went back home to Alabama and started a beautiful, quirky glass business.
Beautiful glass blowing company. No, and it's so stunning. And then you learn that it's not just this like black and white, like, oh, he won't divorce her, like blah, blah, blah. But that there is this shared trauma where it's like they accidentally got pregnant and miscarried. And that is extremely traumatic. And they were children. And like watching their parents watch them and just be like, why do they fight it? Was like so beautiful. I thought that was like a really beautiful moment. Yeah. I think when like Jake's mom is talking to Melanie's mom, is just like watching them be happy together. And it's like, why do they fight it? And it's just because they have like a lot of like trauma around what happened just in their lives and together. And it's like Melanie needed to get out and change and reach her potential. And then Jake needed to like grow up and reach his potential.
Yeah.
And it is. Yeah. It's just a very surprising movie where I think some of the criticisms, I think Roger Ebert did surprisingly give this more stars than usual. I believe he gave it.
How many stars?
He gave it like, I have two? It right here.
Did he give two whole stars to a rom-com?
Allie, he gave it. The site's critic assessment. What is it? Okay. He gave it 3 out of 4 stars.
Shut up.
Yeah.
What?
He gave it 3 out of 4 stars with Roger Ebert. Okay.
Okay. Right. Who's a bit of a rom-com head now?
Okay, Roger Ebert, we see you. So he said it is a fantasy, a sweet, lighthearted fairy tale with Reese Witherspoon at its center. She is as lovable as Doris Day would have been in this role. So I enjoy Witherspoon and the local color, but I am so very tired of the underlying premise, which Roger Ebert respectfully agreed to disagree. The underlying premise is amazing. It's sort of about like a woman in trauma who's looking to like rise above her station, but also like, what is the balance of like honoring your past and growth?
Yes.
And that's it is sort of interesting.
Yeah, it does take on that really great theme about like honoring like your past and where you came from, but also like honoring your future. And it's like, there's that line, I think Jake says it, where it's like, it's so like, he's like, it's okay to have wings, but you can also have roots or something like that.
Oh,
and he says it in a really
hot
Southern accent. And I'm like, whoa,
yes.
Yikes.
It's
I'm in love.
So beautiful. Yeah. He's like, it's okay to have wings, but don't be afraid of your roots. Oh my God. So Allie, like, I say when I heard that, God. I was like, I was mid painting and I was like, oh my God, that's the line. That's the theme stated. Wow. There it is. And I never noticed that before anytime I've seen it. And I've also watched it. Like, this is maybe my like, I've watched it like 2.5 times in the last 2 years, I think.
Yeah.
Like I watched it once a while ago and I was like, this is fun. And then I watched like half of it while I was like cooking a few months ago, and then did another full turnabout this time. But
yeah.
Yeah, I think it's actually, I don't think it's a tired premise. I think part of why it's so compelling, aside from the things that sort of like are not charming, that when they made it in 2002, they found charming. I do think what is very compelling about it are the specifics. And I think because I feel like for rom-coms, yes, they're, it's, it can be an extremely formulaic genre, but I think what's so special about it is when you pepper it in with very specific details, they become so different. And I do feel like this was such a specific world. Like the way it was filled out with, like when you first meet the sheriff, when Jake calls the sheriff and it's like, oh, it's their high school friend who they like got into trouble with. And oh, we go to the bank and oh, we know the woman at the bank. And oh, we go to the bar. We know the bartender. That's our mother-in-law. We know Melanie Linsky, who's our friend from high school. Like these boys, I felt like it was just, the world was so filled out in this very cared for, specific, fun way that I adored, And I'm like, a small town woman goes to the big city, then has to go back to a small town. It's like, yeah, there's a million rom-coms with that premise, but it's like, but with a specific point of view and heart, they're all so different to me. And I love this one.
Oh yeah. The specifics were just so good. Like one of my favorites is like, they tell this story and it's like, I mean, it's fucking dark, but it's also their kids and they're stupid.
Oh my God,
but like, there's just, they like, they just like, and it's so fun to hear about like their kind of crazy, like, past, like the details in the history is so rich, and they like tell all these stories where like Melanie sank a tractor in a pond and Melanie stole catfish from my lake and like Melanie like tied dynamite to a cat because she thought it was gonna die of cancer, and then she blew up the bank but the cat's still alive. And then of course and this is just some good old-fashioned screenwriting, that the story of like the cat that she tried to blow up with dynamite, but then she ended up blowing up the bank. It's like that cat's supposedly still alive. And then we see the cat later licking her and Jake's wedding cake. And it's so good. I love it.
And that is the attention to detail and that like very careful recycling of details, building out the world. And I think, Allie, that's such a good point. Like, I do think also part of what makes this movie compelling and relevant so much later on is that that's a heroine we don't often get to see, right? Like she's very polished when she's in New York, right? She's very polished. Mm-hmm. She's like the sweet Southern girl in the big city. And we go back and you're like, this is like a dirty, like a dirty tricksy woman. And like, that is so fun to see in a rom-com where she's like, I actually blew up the bank. I actually like sank your mom's tractor. Like I am a force and don't mess with me. And I think that's also part of what's so refreshing about the character is seeing the impeccable facade and then like the powerful like intensity underneath. And I think that's really fun. It's fun in 2002 and I think it's equally fun in 2022.
Yeah. And something I'll say too is just like, oh man, because I love, you're right, Mia, that dynamic is so fun. And what makes it so extra special and sparkly in this movie is fucking Reese Witherspoon, who's just a grade A actress.
Dude, I like, she's so great.
She does this thing, and I should really, because I was like rewatching this movie, I was just like so involved in the story that I wasn't paying as much attention to this, but I kind of picked it up like halfway through. But because characters kind of mention it, he's like, the way she switches on and off her Southern accent and when she switches it on and when she switches it off. And like, I'm sure like if I had paid more attention, like there's like specific meaning of when she turns it on and when she turns it off and what's, and you know, and what it means. And like, she's just so good. And the way that she slips in and out of it. And she's just so dang likable. She's just the cutest. God, her hair. Oh my God. Just
oh my God.
Way
I mean,
it's
what
like
a
layered
moment.
And feathered. I was just like, it's oh such a 2000 style, but it like ages well and looks really good.
That's such a good point in that it is a 2000 style that we all were like trying to achieve at that time. But it still looks like okay in 2022.
Yeah.
No, but I think you're absolutely correct. And that's what a lot of the reviews said, is like, even the ones, or sorry, I guess like a lot of the ones that were like, we don't like the movie, but we like Reese, which you're wrong. But it is, she shines in this, the slipping in and out of the accent. And I had the thought too, where I was like, I know this because of an article I read in O Magazine, that she is from Nashville, Tennessee. So, and has a house there, and that's like where her family is. And so I'm like, I also feel like there is like a joy and a pride with which she does this role. And I wonder if that's, she is a Southern woman, so I wonder if that's part of it. But I definitely feel like she does this with so much joy. And there's been like a few movies where, you know, we find out they were having a lot of fun shooting it, and that it shone through. And I think this is one where I think, I mean, I don't know, maybe she had a terrible time. It looks like she's having an incredible time.
You're
embodying
so right.
This character. And yeah, and it's a joy to watch. And I know she is, maybe she identifies with this woman in certain ways, but I love watching her do it. It's so good. And I also, gosh, this, there was such a good, I think the movie's just like very clever as well, where it's like, there is this whole backstory where he is, what is he running for? Comptroller? Did I make that up? Did I steal that from Sex and the City?
Andrew's running for some kind of political position.
Right. And his mother is the mayor. And so it also, to me, it all adds up that she's like, well, we got to find out where this woman's from.
Yeah.
And it's like, she's like, they're, you know, like they read the first puff piece about it and they're like, oh, this is bad journalism. And so there's this backstory, almost like secret expose vibes.
Yes, like this, you're right.
The seamless underlay of like, it's not the central story, but in the background, people are working to unearth the real story. And it's, I think it's just very cleverly done. I think it's very smart. It's very referential of the genre. And it's done in a way that it's not, it doesn't feel tacked on. Like, I buy it all. It's like, oh, that makes sense. And she is lying. And the mayor is shallow. It's, yeah, I really appreciate it. I think there was like layers upon layers of like genre specifics here that are very pleasant to the rom-com lovers' viewing experience.
Yeah. You're right, because like it's the Patrick Dempsey's mother, played by the incredible Candace Bergen, just fucking incredible. I always think about her in the role in Miss Congeniality. That's like, I see her and I just think Miss Congeniality.
Who can look at Candace Bergen and not think Miss Congeniality the entire time? And she always plays like a very similar high status woman.
Kind of, very opinionated woman.
Exactly.
And this is no different. But you're right. It's like the kind of like difficult mother-in-law is also justified in the fact that, she's a mayor of New York and she's a high profile job. And everything she does is really, really public. So of course she would want to investigate this new fiance because she's going to wonder how it affects her career. And of course the, you know, kind of like assistant that she goes and has go
say.
To Alabama is rom-com legend Kevin Sussman.
Kevin Sussman. Oh yeah. We got another Kevin Sussman appearance. And this time you didn't even see him coming. He's like,
you don't even see
a
him
side
coming.
Character's side character.
Yeah, exactly.
What a treat. So Kevin, we hope you're well.
We hope
you're
well.
Doing well, buddy.
So good to see you in this.
So good to see you pop back up in something. We love you.
I'm still hoping for a Kevin Sussman rom-com where he's the
lead.
Give
us a Kevin Sussman-centric rom-com and we'll be the happiest ladies.
We'd be thrilled.
But that whole world is very fun as well. And I do think it also scratches this. I also think part of why it's so pleasant is, you know, there's so many elements of rom-com that are like fantastical and vacation-y. And I do think the whole we're in a blacked out Tiffany's, the lights go on, you pick your wedding ring. Like it's all so fantasy and lovely. And I think that's part of why it's so wonderful, because I think in equal parts, so is the small town where you know everybody. And everybody loves you. So it's like, I think it's like very smartly done where there's just so much pleasant. There's like, there's so many pleasant atmospheres in this film of like, oh, we have like the fantasy, like secret prince trope. We have like the fantasy, like, ooh, it's a small town and it's safe and it's wonderful and everybody loves you and you know everybody. And I'm just like, oh, I think that's part of what makes it so lovely is it's just, I feel like it's hitting a lot of like, I don't know, like oxytocin, like happy yeah. thing.
Yeah. The scene, like there's like a scene where like, well, like, okay, so there's a scene where Melanie, you know, kind of goes to a bar and she insults everybody and kind of like talks down and where she's like, I'm better than you all. And you guys have this like sad life. And anyway, she's drunk and she says mean things to people and outs a character. And then she has to go and apologize for everything. And this is where some great screenwriting comes in. Normally you could be like, oh, I have to go like, you know, apologize to people in their homes. Nope. They put a big, fun country music festival in the main street of the town.
It's so beautiful.
And then everybody has to go down and she has to go to the fun festival and apologize to everybody. And it's just like, there's music and dancing. And then there are guys drinking beers at the water tower. And it's like, oh my God. Wow.
But it's the best. And then it's, and then of course the titular name of the film, the song or the titular song, yeah. Sweet Home Alabama plays and they all dance to it. And it is really, as much as I don't want it to get me, I just got chills even saying it. It's really lovely. It's a lovely scene.
So we're
very
good.
Naturally, Melanie Lynskey's character, I don't know her name, but is like naturally dances with, she very naturally starts dancing with Melanie Smooters' ex-husband Jake. And then her husband, who's like a classic Southern dude, then is like going to spin Melanie around. And then they kind of like put Jake and Melanie together and it's very sweet. Also, okay, small issue with the film.
Okay.
These characters are 26 and they're all walking around the town being like, oh my God, is that you? Wait a minute, Melanie? And it's like, no, it's 8 years since high school. Everybody looks very similar. Like, that's my one issue with the film.
Yeah.
When she was like seeing her best friend from high school and was like, oh my God, is that you? And I'm like, I don't know. I've been out of high school a lot longer. When I see my friends, they all look still pretty similar to how we looked in high school. So that was like a funny age thing. And even the fact that she's 26, like she's so accomplished. It's very unusual. It's very unusual.
A 26-year-old designer at New York Fashion Week.
Yeah, who's returning home to deal with like her ex-marriage and this whole community. I'm sort of like, wow, that's a lot has occurred in her short 26 years of life. So yeah, that's what I'll say. Andy Tennant and I don't know.
And Douglas J. Ebach and C.J. Cox. That's what we have to say.
That's what we have to say to that. That's a little nuts. But also, here's what I have to say too. It's a rom-com. That's what I want to see. I want to see. Yeah. It's like New York Times called you're the next big thing in fashion. I also love there is. I mean, it's so it also much darker than I remembered.
Yes.
Is her outing her friend at a bar in the South in the early aughts, right? Like that also, I was like, whoa, that is like bad, 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 bad. I do love their exchanges when he's like, I would be upset too if women's wear daily called me like less than average. Like, I'm like, oh, that, like those specifics were so fun. That was much more intense than I remembered. I was like, that is very bad.
Yeah, that was very like, whoa. And, but I think what was nice is like, A, he wasn't like portrayed that character. Let me look up his name. He wasn't portrayed. I think it's Bobby Ray. Bobby Ray wasn't portrayed in a super stereotypical way. He definitely felt like three-dimensional. We saw his home. We saw his grandfather.
Yeah.
And I think that like, what was nice too is like, people didn't really make that big of like a deal about it.
I really do love her relationship with that character. And I do think that that character is lovely and dimensional. And I do enjoy whether or not it would have been realistic in this place at that time. I enjoy the portrayal. And let's, you know, we had a more general homophobic culture at that time. So to have a big budget movie a gay character being outed in this way that was supportive and positive and where somewhat apologized and took responsibility for a horrible thing. It's probably more rare to see in 2002 than other rom-coms that were coming out of the town, which other rom-coms that were coming out at the same time that probably were just, you know, blatantly homophobic, as opposed to this movie that was potentially just addressing homophobia and being gay in this environment in that time.
Yeah. There is a scene where, like, her friend from New York and Bobby Ray, like, give each other a knowing glance where it's like, okay, here's a suggestion of a future. And I was like, that's awesome. And it also fulfills the best friends get together trope, which I love.
Absolutely. Oh my God, that's beautiful. I love that. Yeah. And I think also this movie just does a great job too. We start in this like very idyllic New York big rom-com moment, and then we pivot hard to the South, and then we become enamored with like small town rom-com vibes. And then idyllic New York comes to the small town. And I feel like by the time Andrew shows back up in the South, I'm like, oh my God, I forgot about you, you know? And then the stakes feel so real when she's like choosing between them. And then there's this whole thing with her mother that's like fascinating, you know, where her mom like kind of wants her to choose the moneyed guy and get out of the town like the mom was never able to do. And you learn where some of Melanie's values around this were created. But then she actually really loved the father. There's so many beautiful things, right? She's talking about marrying Melanie's father, and she was like, I just wanted to get it done with so fast because I was so afraid he'd change his mind. And you can tell Melanie is just like set these events in motion for values that like aren't in line with her heart. And then when New York comes to the small town, it's just rom-com fun. It's just so fun. The friends, the mom, Andrew, and then Ellie. I mean, this is done so masterfully. They are hinting that like there's this like big mystery around Jake where they're like, well, you see, Jake's made a name for himself. And she's like, oh, you're still working at the tire factory. And then it's like, there's this like big secret where it's like, ooh, what's going on with Jake? And then in this really beautiful way where Melanie notices this beautiful deep South glass and appreciates it as an artist herself. Then her and her friends end up at this glass blowing place and they're like, this is so fun. And then she finds out it was Jake's. The biggest grand gesture is he worked on himself and found his purpose and became the man he was supposed to be. And it's just so
beautiful. Is there anything sexier than that? That they, you know, went through this really hard thing together, and instead of trying to like force her to stay and make it work, he let her go live her life, work on herself. He went, worked on himself, found his purpose, built something from the ground up, and then did work on him. And he could have been like, hey, Melanie, as soon as she came back into town, he could have been like, I made something for myself. Like I, you know, have this big glass blowing place. But no, he played it cool. He didn't say anything because he wanted her to make the choice. You know what I mean? He respected her agency throughout it, except maybe for the beginning when he didn't sign those divorce papers right away.
And we'll forgive that. We'll forgive that. Absolutely.
We'll forgive that because that was
like crap scallion dynamic of like, I've got the key. I took all your money. You know, it's like, okay, there's a lot happening here.
But he kind of like let her make the choices and like her come to him. And man, his glass blowing place is just like in the cutest little like red barn that has like a like kind of bougie little cafe attached to it where I'm like, oh my God, I'd love to have brunch there.
Same. Every time I see this movie, I'm like, what does he mean by have lunch? So he owns this glass company and then he also provides food. Like I'm always like, what's happening here? It's that he's an artist and he owns the resort and those are the facts of the situation. So it's your alley. You're so right. Everything you just said is absolutely correct. And I think that's also why, again, this movie is so compelling, was then, is now, minus a few things. But I think because that's a theme that's true to life, which there is something attractive about people, A, loving each other enough to let each other go, but also being like, hey, maybe I've got to work on myself. to be prepared for the correct partnership, not like trap the correct partnership, so I can be my full self. Wow, wait, I think I just had a little moment. Wow, that's really, yeah, food for thought.
Food for thought.
But yes, and then we get a lovely little just hodgepodge of tropes wedding sequence where the wedding is here, it's happening. This lawyer, her lawyer is trying to find her. Everybody understandably won't tell him where she is because they think he's a journalist, which is very fun.
Yeah.
And then Jake let her go, but she didn't let him go. She didn't sign the papers. And I love Allie. It always breaks my heart when she's like, does anybody have a pen? And then
yes,
Jake's mom has a pen. I mean, doesn't it just tear your heart out? Because that casting is incredible.
Jean Smart,
incredible, always freaking stunning. Scene stealing, Jean Smart.
So
and
great.
She's like, you know, honey, these things don't just happen. And she's talking about all of it. She's talking about love. She's talking about the fact that she didn't sign the papers. It's so beautiful. And then she does a hard thing, which again, it's a very real thing where it's like you can end up on a track with someone and just want to continue the track to not hurt them.
Yeah.
So Melanie does the brave thing and she's like, okay, you know, I don't love you. And I know this could give me everything that could validate my fears about where I came from. And I know I'm going to hurt you and I know I've done everything wrong, but I don't love you. And then Andrew takes it surprisingly on the chin.
Takes it super well.
So well, which in a different version, he gets a different wife. So, you know, c'est la vie. And then the mom is sort of like villain. That's kind of a fun thing. He stands up to his mom. I like all that. That all works for me. And then I really like that, you know, she's like, if you're friends of the bride, stick around. I got to go get me a groom. And then there's this whole thing about how at their first wedding,
yes,
Jake was so drunk and puked all over her. So then the fact that they get to have their wedding reception. I mean, Andrew did pay for it. So I do now at this moment, I'm like, well, is that ethical? Mm-hmm. But you know
what? It was also like a wedding in Alabama versus a wedding in New York. It probably wasn't too expensive.
It seems to be a small town. It's 2002. Yeah. And he can afford it. Actually, it's fine. It's fine. So then she goes to get him and they have a very similar speech to when they were children.
Yeah, God, they do this awesome childhood flashback at the beginning where Dakota Fanning plays a young Reese Witherspoon. And God, there's this line, and I fucking love it. And it's been burned into my brain where she's like, why do you want to marry me? And he goes, and Jake goes as a kid, so I can kiss you whenever I want. I freaking love it. And then, of course, you know, flash forward at whatever, 20 some years, and they're now on the same beach. It's the same kind of thunderstorm. And there's like a setup where like lightning never strikes twice, but we're about to see lightning strike twice again.
Oh,
When Jake is like, why do you want to marry me? And then she says his line back to him, which is, so I can kiss you whenever I want.
Oh my God. It's thematically so satisfying. It's all so satisfying. I mean.
Oh, yeah. And kissing the rain, too. They kiss in the rain, too, Mia.
And there's a storm even before the wedding. It's like, oh, there's a storm. Careful. There's a storm coming. And it's like, yeah, weather and emotional. Honestly, it's so good. There are elements that you just got to be like, no, absolutely not. But as a rom-com, the structure, craft, the care, the structure, the details, it's all there.
So
it's really good. This is an example of big studio rom-coms at the height. You know,
yes.
this was like golden era quality, big budget, wide release rom-com. And I love it. And I love it.
It's so good.
It's so good. Allie, final thoughts before we do tropes?
Final thoughts. I mean, it has every rom-com trope you want in it, and we'll soon count them up. But the last thing I'll say is I just want to shout out quickly to rom-com side character heroes, Mary Lynn Rechkub, who is like always the best friend in everything. She plays Dorothea in this, and she's like Oh, yeah. She's just like in so much. She's so funny and great. And then the other one is Melanie Lininsky, who is like, I feel like the side character best friend and everything. And it's like a side character best friend in this. And also Mia has hooked me onto Yellow Jackets, and she is just, I mean, you want to see somebody just soar, man. She's just like, she plays, I think she's like kind of like the lead in it, or one of like the big main leads in it. And
it's like one of her first big lead roles, kind of.
And it's like, oh my God, why haven't we given this woman a leading role sooner? She's so great. And she's good in this movie too. She's so like sweet and doe-eyed in this, but oh my gosh. You guys, if you haven't watched Yellow Jackets, you gotta watch Yellow Jackets. Nothing rom-commy about it whatsoever.
No, brace yourselves. Yeah, but it's to see Melanie Lynskey in a leading role. It is as soon as you see it, you're like, what have we been doing with Melanie Lynskey?
Yes.
But she's fantastic.
She's a star. Those are my final thoughts, Mia.
I mean, same boat. Yeah, I love Melanie Lynskey. I think the casting was really lovely. I think all the side characters were really lovely. I just really appreciate all of the joyful elements of rom-com that were brought into this rom-com. I just think it's like a joy to watch, and there's so many fun things happening. I think that it has like some of the same elements as like Love Actually or When Harry Met Sally, where the rewatchability is very high because there's so much happening and all of it's very well loved and well crafted that you're just like, oh, but dude, like there's like, and then this happens and then this happens, but it's all working together. And I love it.
There's so many surprises in it. It's surprise. Like I thought I remembered this movie, and I was just, there's so many little twists and surprises and details, and it was just awesome.
We like to wrap up our movie discussions by counting all the familiar rom-com tropes we spotted. Ali, do you want to kick us off?
Yes. Okay. So we start off with a childhood flashback. So good. Young Dakota Fanning. We cut to, she wakes up, she's at work. The flashback was a dream, half flashback, half dream. And we find out she's a busy businesswoman. She stayed up all night doing fashion. And I said, quirky job. She works in the New York fashion industry. So busy businesswoman, quirky job. I said she has a huge ass apartment in New York, but she's a famous. Well, she's an up and coming fashion designer. So I said huge ass apartment in New York. Oh, she's got a gay best friend. She actually has.
Yeah.
Two gay best friends, I would argue. And she also, I think this actor, gosh, he's so good. His name is Nathan Lee Graham. He's so funny. God, he's in that show. Was it like Las Vegas to LA or LA to Las Vegas?
LA to Vegas. Yeah.
LA to Vegas. That's it. Oh my God. His comedic timing is just so next good. Level. He's so fucking funny. Nathan Lee Graham kind of plays those two, like kind of, I would argue his character is more two-dimensional than Bobby Ray's character, who is more three-dimensional. There's that. And then we have Going on Paper guy, Andrew, played by Patrick Dempsey. So good. He has like everything. The only thing is she just wasn't the first. He wasn't the first boy she ever kissed. I have Grand Gesture at Tiffany's. I just wrote holy fuck. where he proposes to her at breakfast at Tiffany's. I just wrote Kevin Sussman. I wrote disapproving Kevin Sussman. I have disapproving mother-in-law. I have Big City Girl Goes to Small Town.
Yes.
I have, and these are just notes to myself. this is a side note, but her parents' names are Earl and Pearl.
Oh my God, no. They didn't do that. Let's just underline again the importance of names. The fact that they're names. Earl and Pearl Smooter, and then that she was Smooter and then became Carmichael to try to elevate herself. Like again, you just love to see importance placed on names.
Yes. It's important. I'm just pointing that out to the writers of the back of plan.
We love a last name.
I have there's a secret expose trope where Kevin Sussman's kind of spying on her. There's a runaway bride. She runs away from the wedding. I have best friends end up together. I have there's a dramatic punch. Reese Witherspoon punches her mother-in-law and is kind of like a hint at her kind of crazy past. I have spontaneous dancing too. Another trope, the title of the song or the title of the movie is in a song. There's a photo montage ending where it's like an epilogue and there's like a bunch of,
photos
to see, you know, what happens afterwards. And then I also have that Jake has a quirky job too. He's into glass and we love him for it.
Oh, we love a glass blowing cafe owner because that makes sense. I love it.
He's a quirky mode of transportation. He's got a fun plane that flies on and lands on water. Those planes, fun kind of quirky plane he always has. I have like a funny dog, a dog that's funny and like it's comedic. Like cut to the dog and it's like making like a kind of face. Like,
what are you doing there?
Okay, I think that's it, but I know there's more.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
But that's you what totally I have.
No, those are fantastic. And you absolutely spoke to me. I think you got all of mine except for you got good on paper guy, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I have, I'm adding ends in a wedding and I'm adding easy breakup.
Yes. Oh, so, you're so right. Easiest breakup.
Yeah.
Ooh, easy, I'll also say instead of best friends in love with your, obsessed with your love life, small town is obsessed with your love life. Like everyone is always talking about them and their history.
Ooh, and you know what I would sort of add, I feel like it does both. I feel like it does like New York is the most magical city and like small towns in America are the most magical city.
Yeah, so I feel like it does a good job kind of like showing like the fun of both and honoring the fun of both big city and small town.
Yeah, I love that. So let's see here, that takes us to 26 tropes, which we expect nothing less from a height of the golden age of the early aughts big studio rom-com. Okay, well, now I think it's time to rate this rom-com. We here at PSL of Rom-Coms have an ever-changing list of top 5 rom-coms. As of now, here are our top 5. The Best Man, When Harry Met Sally, Love and Basketball, The Wedding Singer, and 10 Things I Hate About You. So now, if we so choose today, we can put Sweet Home Alabama on that list. We all have to unanimously agree to vote one of the other off the top 5 list to replace it with. So what do we think? Does Sweet Home Alabama deserve a spot on the top 5 list? And if so, who should it knock off? Oh, this is a tough one.
It's so hard. This movie is so well-written, structured.
It's a very well-structured, very pleasant rom-com. It's a great split, 50-50 rom-to-com.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Does it define the genre? I mean, I feel like it is the most noteworthy, like, Southern rom-com when you think of one. You know, if you're like, what's, like, the most famous woman returns to a small town rom-com? It's this one.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's one that other rom-com. Yeah.
The title is Sweet Home Alabama. It's all about, returning home and her dealing with like her past and her future and trying to find that balance between her past and her future. Yeah.
Does it innovate? I don't know if it innovates. Maybe, but not in a massive way.
I don't think it really innovates. But it's pretty exemplary of that very classic storyline that we see in rom-coms of, city girl going home.
Right. And we see a lot of like carbon copy people trying to recreate this magic and not quite hitting it. And this is just a pretty magical film.
Yeah.
So it's tough, you know, but then there are elements that don't age well where it's the Confederacy as a concept is neither cute nor charming.
And they it's not like just mentioned. It is like very much, there's a lot of scenes and like battle reenactments where it's like,
where there's just really, where now it just feels like this egregious blind spot, of like trauma induced, like with how many references to the Confederacy and, so
and I think for that reason, I don't know, it's not gonna make it on the list, but but it is, but the formula and the structure that it landed upon is something that is used probably in almost all Hallmark movies, where it's like big city girl goes home to small town. There's a man from her past in the small town.
Yeah, it's a past.
Hallmark movies don't like deal with like divorce or, you know, miscarriages, but, and that's what makes this movie like detailed and beautiful and adds like a very, like adds more depth to it. But we don't, we watch Hallmark to have fun. Yeah, the same formula. It's like, is just pulled directly from this movie. And so I think,
so it probably does define a strong element of the genre. So it is a great film. There's elements of it that don't age well. But it is it's a really lovely top-notch rom-com. Yeah. It's really good.
For sure. Okay. Well, I think on that note, it's time for a reality check. In this segment, we test out the tropes and plot devices in the rom-coms we've just watched and see if they hold up in the real world. In the rom-com Sweet Home Alabama, there's a truly magical proposal scene in Tiffany's in New York. But are big over-the-top proposals like this, do they happen in real life? And what's the most over-the-top proposal we've ever heard of or dreamt of?
Oh, wow. Okay, I have like a dark one. If you haven't followed, this is kind of a dark story. It's not that dark, but okay. So this is just like a pretty comedic moment in my life that I always think of and I go, I can't believe that happened. When I was like a teen, as you all know, Allie and I both worked at movie theaters at the same time in different states. So I was working at this movie theater and this guy came in who I'd known, or I ran into this guy at one point who was older than me, and I was like, hey, how's it going? And he was like, great, I'm about to propose to my girlfriend. And I was like, wow, that's great, how are you gonna do it? And he's like, I'm taking her on a helicopter ride, we're gonna go up, and then I've got it all spelled out on the ground. And I was like, that's awesome. And then a little while later, he came into my movie theater and I was selling him a ticket and I was like, oh, hey, God, you know, the last time I saw you, you were getting engaged. Like, oh my God, how did it go? And he was like, he said no. I was like, oh my God. like the most upsetting situation to be in. I was like, enjoy the movie. So sorry. Jesus fuck. It was so bad. I mean, you wouldn't propose to someone in that way if you didn't sort of have a confirmation that they would say yes ahead of time.
Exactly, Mia. That's the thing.
And if also, don't tell a high school student about it. Maybe. I don't know.
Here's the thing. You're exactly right, Mia. If you're going to do a big over-the-top proposal, it's probably, you know, just, you know, it's going to be an investment financially. You should probably just check first to make sure that, like, I think before you propose to anyone, you should just have a conversation being like, hey, what do you think about marriage?
To me,
just kind of like testing the waters first. I feel like I know a lot of couples that do that where it's like, are we thinking this is going to be marriage? What are we thinking about?
I don't know anyone who gets engaged without knowing it was coming on some level, which when I was like a child, I maybe found unromantic. But as an adult, it's unhinged that you wouldn't have discussed such a large choice. And then are put on the spot in a public setting often.
Yes.
Yeah, that's no. Yeah, and that's a vestige. It's another fun little rollover. You know, sometimes we see bits of rom-com. We're like, why is stalking sexy? But yeah, where, you know, like financially, the men had to propose to you. So, you know, that was like a financial situation. So it made more sense. And now it would be like, well, why would that get sprung on you in this day and age? And it's a vestige from a different time.
Yeah.
But Ellie, what about you?
Oh, man. It's so interesting. I feel like there was like, I think Public Proposals are happening more and more ever since that. Do you remember that thing that happened like in the early 2000s where this girl was like standing or was like sitting in a car, like the trunk of a car, and then she was blindfolded and they like took her blindfold off and then they like drove the car. And then like there was this whole song and dance where people, do you remember? It's like a YouTube video.
It's like she had like a whole wedding, right? Where then they gave her a dress and like then she got married and she was like sobbing. Was
yeah,
it that one?
And it was like they were like driving by people. Yeah, there was like a that,
there was a lot of like
era.
Surprise wedding videos. I remember there was yeah. there was a big era of like YouTube videos of people having these like very elaborate proposals.
Yeah, like I think in 2000, around like 2011, where it was like wow, and it was just like a big craze. And I feel like ever since then, like proposals are becoming like bigger and more public. And I had one friend who, this is so romantic. It was like she met her husband in college and they like did this, they like volunteered at this with this group that like helped, you know, underprivileged kids go to camp and afford camp and stuff like that. And so he like surprised her and took her back to this camp and like proposed to her on top of this mountain. And it's really magical. And you can see it on YouTube. And I think it has like hundreds of thousands of views. But oh yeah, I had a friend have like a crazy, like surprise YouTube proposal. And it's so romantic. And when you watch really it, cool. better have a box of Kleenex next to you because you will cry.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I want to link.
He even bought her a dress too. Like it was like a whole thing where it's like,
oh my
I have
gosh,
to say,
trope.
It is a trope. And it's literally a rom-com trope brought to life. And I'm like, wow, I love that.
It's really cute. Yeah. Really, really cute. Okay. Well, I would say it checks out. People are doing it to varying degrees of success. But they are over the top do exist. So, you know, what are you going to do about it?
Can you imagine that helicopter ride home, Mia? Just like, God, it'd be so awkward.
Can you imagine having, oh my God, with the pilot? Jesus Christ, the poor pilot. God. Oh my
that
God.
Poor pilot
I
is
know.
Just like, get me the fuck out of here.
Oh, God. And I think that guy's married now. I think he's fine. Okay, also, good. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ. Good mouth moment. But what are you going to do? Well, thank you all for listening to the podcast. We have a new episode every week. And remember to subscribe and rate. And we are brought to you by Campfire Media.
And P.S. I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
P.S. I love rom-coms. I love
Ever wanted to hear from the neighbor at 9 Cloverfield Lane? Or what if I told you that Dr. Loomis's worst patient wasn't Michael Myers? I'm Adam Peacock, host of the podcast My Neighbors Are Dead. Join me each week as I talk to the lesser-known characters from your favorite horror films. Each week is an all-new, fully improvised journey into the unknown featuring friends and luminaries from the worlds of comedy, horror, and beyond. New episodes every Tuesday on Campfire Media. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
Campfire.